Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, March the 28th. So, are you trying to buy or sell a home right now? How's that going for you? Are you struggling with a rising mortgage payment? Are you worried about all the news we've been reading about and seeing and hearing lately that new home sales are down, foreclosures of homes are way up? Yesterday, we saw in the news that Wisconsin's foreclosure rate is higher than the national average. Why is this happening? What's going on? What does it mean? And we wonder if you know anybody that's going through this right now. And we'll talk about what impact this has on our economy overall with our guest economist and welcome your questions and stories for him. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest. He is Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Good morning.
Good morning.
So we saw this big front page article in the State Journal yesterday, the headline, Foreclosure on the American Dream. And it profiled a couple losing their home. I think it was in Colorado because they couldn't keep up with the rising mortgage payments based on the loan that they took out. First of all, just give us a scope of this problem. How bad is this problem?
Well, home foreclosures are up, historically. The people that keep track of these things find that that more people are in trouble than have been in quite a while, and that's bad news. If you think about one of the things that can rupture your life, having the bank come and take your house when you're already in all kinds of credit trouble is really disturbing.
Yeah. Why are so many people in this position now? More than it says here that mortgage foreclosure filings are at a 37-year high this month.
Yeah, and it may be even higher than that because the Mortgage Bankers Association has only been keeping track for 37 years.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Well, a lot of it comes from the same thing that drove a lot of good news in recent years. As most sociologists and economists would tell you, home ownership is one of the ways to create more stable family situations, more stable neighborhoods, etc. And we have historically very high home ownership rates now. About 70% of households own their own home, which is higher than it's been in a long time. Perhaps 10 million more, maybe more than that, households own their own homes versus 10 years ago. And this has been particularly evident in demographic groups that typically have been disenfranchised from the housing market. Mm-hmm. For example, now something like half of all Black and Hispanic households own their own homes, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason, and that's particularly remarkable if you consider the fact that home prices have been rising crazy rapidly in the last couple of years. Well, the reason for that has been some innovations in the mortgage market. The old joke used to be that banks will only lend money to people that don't need it.
Right.
And maybe the 1980 or so, the mortgage products that were available were pretty rigid. You would get a fixed rate for a certain number of years, and that would be collateralized or backed up by the value of your home. So it wasn't a terribly risky investment for the bank or savings and loan or whoever. When interest rates went crazy in the early 80s, there was a push to do something about that, and so there was some relaxation of how mortgages could be put together. And since then, there's been a lot of smart people working on this, and over the last five or so years, the so-called subprime lending market has exploded.
Yeah, and what does subprime mean?
Well, subprime is sort of a catchphrase for a variety of different types of loans, but it basically means for those folks that are not able to qualify for the traditional prime mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And such lending exists in car loans, in homes, and even personal loans and other sorts of things. And the idea is this, that if I'm going to lend you money, I want to make sure I get paid back. I have to get paid. paid not only for waiting to get my money back, but also I have to get paid for the risk that you might not pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so the subprime market is typified by mortgage interest rates that are somewhere between 2 or 3, maybe even as much as 6% higher than other prime mortgages, which sounds predatory, except it's not entirely so. It's that, you know, it has allowed people to get mortgages that might not have otherwise been able to do so. And in most cases, that's worked out fine. However, when you take on more risk that way, you're going to see more foreclosures among the most marginal buyers, and that's exactly what we've seen.
Yeah, let me hold you there for now, and we will check our weather forecast and then continue talking about the housing market and all of the news about the increase in foreclosures, mortgage foreclosures, and what this all means not only to us personally, but to the economy in general. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Talking with Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Looking for your questions for him and perhaps even your experiences with this. Do you or do you know anyone that is going through one of these record-high foreclosures right now? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. During his 5 o'clock hour during this month's Education Today program, Ben and his guests will examine schools in suburban, metropolitan, and rural communities. What challenges do they have in common, and what issues are unique? That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. It's now 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, March the 28th, and we're talking about the housing market and its impact on the economy, and also news that foreclosures of homes at a record high, foreclosures in Wisconsin higher than the national average. We wonder why this is happening and wondering what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest helping us understand this, Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And before we go to the phones, Professor Quinn, you were talking about this subprime loan market, about how these have, they're high-cost loans, they have a higher interest rate because they're riskier. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of ways that loans could be riskier than the so-called prime loan market. For example, if somebody doesn't have money to put down, and so we've seen a lot of, mm-hmm. zero money down.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen interest-only loans where you're not paying back the principal, you're not paying back the amount that you borrowed, you're just sort of renting the money. And we've had traditionally and recently very low interest rates, and so that, you're not making really any progress there. Another one, which I think is the scariest one, are these particular type of adjustable rate mortgage called teasers. The old school adjustable rate mortgages would be every few years they would adjust up or down depending on what the market was. So the borrower was taking some risk as well as the lender as far as what would happen with the market. But to get people in, they've had these 327 or 228 loans, which is after 2 or 3 years, the rate jumps from a very low introductory rate to a higher rate. And folks that were qualified for the loans, and barely so, at the lower rate, find themselves unable to pay for the higher rate.
Oh, and that's so what we're seeing here, for the most part, are people who might have maybe have a lower income as it is, maybe have difficulty getting a regular mortgage, are taking out these subprime mortgages, and that now they're running into trouble.
That's correct. And, you know, what happened was during the boom, those folks that had, that could qualify for the prime mortgages Well, you know, a lot of those folks already had homes or, you know, they were in pretty decent shape. So at the margin, the folks that were coming into home ownership for the first time were those that were traditionally renters. Many of those, most of those, are good for the mortgages that they have. They might be stretched, but they have been able to do it. But more a higher percentage of those there have not been able to do it. And so now we're seeing something like 8% of the, which is 6 million households, of subprime mortgages are seriously delinquent. That is, they're 90 days or more late. And that's a scary thing. Mm-hmm. That's about twice or so the delinquency rate of the market as a whole.
Yeah. Well, let me go to a caller, and Tom in Eau Claire. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning.
My call has to do with a recent mortgage that we took on in which, while we were looking for mortgages, the banker discussed both mortgage insurance and taking a second mortgage, but when it came time, offered only the second mortgage at a slightly higher insurance or at a slightly higher interest rate. And is this one of the methods that is being used to protect financiers?
I'm not sure about that particular case, but up until very recently, it seems that mortgage brokers have not been terribly interested in whether or not, or at least some mortgage brokers, mm-hmm. have not been terribly interested in whether or not anybody can pay them back rather than just getting their origination fees. And the reason for that is that most of the time, that when you get a mortgage, the people that you get the mortgage from are not the ones that are ultimately providing the money. Something like 75% of mortgages are repackaged as securities, basically bonds backed up by that mortgage. And they pay, there are brokers that sort of make buyers and sellers get together, of mortgages, that is. And so many of the brokers who have been unscrupulous have, they're just interested in sort of selling the mortgages. So I'm not sure about your particular case, but it may be something of that nature.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you know, Professor Quinn, is there concern that this was unscrupulous, that this was predatory, this was the wrong thing to be doing, offering these various subprime mortgages with these teaser rates or the low introductory interest rate, no money down? Was this the wrong thing to do?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, there was predatory lending practices going on. People were creating loans that really had no prayer of being paid back. But I would not be so quick to judge the whole industry. I think that the vast majority of the problems that have been created are either because of just, the typical market risk. I mean, that's why there were higher interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it was based on very much of a rose-colored view of what was going to happen. As long as housing prices were increasing, as long as interest rates remained low, unemployment rates remained low, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
if you needed to refinance, you could. If you're, when you have housing rate prices that are increasing at 10% per year, after a couple of years, you can refinance into a more conventional loan because you have 20% ownership of your home and everything's hunky-dory. But in the last little while, the housing market has kind of come to a screeching halt. New housing starts are down something like a third from the peak in January 2006. There is something like an 8-month supply of new homes on the market and a 6-month supply of existing homes, and we're seeing a flattening of that. At the same time, there's the Fed has made noises in the last couple of years about raising interest rates, even though they don't have complete control over this market. But a lot of it is just the bad scenario occurred, and people are getting stuck.
Yeah, and I know I've heard about jitters and the stock market being wary about all this. How does this tie into our economy overall? Is this what does this do?
Well, there's a variety of different ways that it affects the economy. And first, let me talk about the personal effects. I mentioned this before, but when you lose your house, that's a horrible experience. That's not good for anybody. And it's not good for a neighborhood. You know, neighborhoods are more stable when you have people who own their homes. And, in fact, there's been some community groups that are arguing in favor of, you know, foreclosure timeouts because, you know, typically these bad loans are concentrated in particular neighborhoods. So that's a bad thing. It also affects, you know, the housing market, obviously, because there's going to be fewer buyers as the, these loans get more difficult to get. There's going to be more sellers as people want to get out of their homes. So that sort of exasperates that, that problem. It hurts bond markets in that it makes everybody a little more jittery about the quality of loans. Maybe they should be a little more jittery. But those folks that are holding that debt, you know, might not get paid. There's also a more general economic effect in a variety of different ways. One of them is just the housing market is an important market in the economy because houses are expensive. It employs a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, you buy appliances when you build a new house, et cetera. In general, when there's about a $100 drop in your wealth because of the stock market, for example, like what we saw a few years back, that's going to cut consumer spending by about $3 or $4 per $100. Might be twice that with respect to housing. And if you figure that we might be in the middle of a housing readjustment, that could have a significant effect on consumer spending, mm-hmm. which could have a significant effect on the economy.
Yeah. Let me bring in another caller, Mark in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I had a question for your guest. You know, the article that you referred to, or the report you referred to, talked about a couple in Colorado, and it seems, you know, from my sister lives out there, lost her home to a subprime situation with the economy. Her ex-husband lost his. People that she knows are losing theirs. Is Colorado and the Rocky Mountain West somehow the epicenter for this spreading problem? And is this problem going to eventually become as big as the savings and loan crash of the 80s?
That's a great question. And actually, it's the Midwest and the South have been hit most heavily by this for some reason. But that doesn't mean that there's not, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, actually literally millions of people around the country that have also been hit by this. So I'm not sure about Colorado in particular. You know, housing markets tend to be very local rather than national. But you know, this is something that's happening everywhere in the country. The other question you asked about the savings and loan, mm-hmm. or maybe I would compare this even to the tech implosion. It doesn't look like this is going to be anywhere near as critical as that. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, financial crises are notoriously difficult to predict. But in the tech implosion in 2000 or 2001, there was $9 trillion of equity wealth that was destroyed. And so far, it seems like we're maybe on the order of, you know, $200 to $300 billion, which is not trivial. But considering that we weathered the tech implosion fairly well, that bodes well for this. Now, there are quite a few differences between, you know, tech wealth, which maybe people thought was phony in the first place, and homeownership wealth. And also, there's different policy issues. For example, the Fed...
I'm going to have to, Professor Quinn, go into those differences and examples after we check news from National Public Radio. It's news time. And then we'll continue talking about the housing market and home foreclosures and the effect on the economy coming up after the news. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Wednesday morning, March the 28th. We're talking about the housing market and recent news about the housing market, new home sales down, foreclosure rates up, a 37-year high this month, reported this month. Also news that foreclosures in Wisconsin higher than the national average. We're trying to figure out why all this is and what all this means and wondering if you have any questions or concerns or maybe even experiences to share along these lines. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And just before news time, Professor Quinn, you were talking about the overall impact of especially this, home market bust going on, and comparing it to the high-tech bust of some years ago. Want to talk more about that?
Yes. Just to make the point that the exposure, at least right now, as far as we know, looks to be far less in terms of financial markets and credit markets than the tech implosion or the savings and loan implosion of the early 1990s. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't real people suffering terribly as a result of this, but it doesn't look like it's going to tank the economy, at least not right now, barring anything else unraveling.
Yeah, let's go to Ryan in Appleton. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Hi. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Listen, just regarding the call-in from Tom earlier, just to kind of give you a distinction, the difference between second mortgage options and PMI, I want to make sure that callers are understanding, is really two different things. And his question was it better for the lender? And really what it was is PMI is a function of equity to the loan value.
Yeah. PMI means what?
Private mortgage insurance.
All right.
And he had said, was this something maybe possibly that was benefiting the lender? And what it really is when you qualify for two separate mortgages, you actually are in a better position as the borrower versus having the mortgage insurance, which can be costly.
Yeah. So, Ryan, it sounds like you're in this line of work.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, what can you tell us about these all these foreclosures on these subprimes?
Well, really, subprime is a necessary evil if it's properly positioned. And subprime is not a bad thing if a borrower understands that they need to improve something. Something's causing them to need to be qualified under a subprime category. And so it's not a long-term fix. It's a short-term fix to an end goal. And that's where it's kind of there's so many layers to this type of planning that if you stick with a subprime loan for a long period of time, as we see softening markets, for example, in appraisals, no longer is that person in the same position they were a year ago. And so you really need to take them in stride and understand, try to qualify in the near future for a prime loan, for an A-paper loan. It's really a case-by-case scenario.
Yeah.
Furthermore, it is different, though, from the tech industry when it imploded. It's such a different thing. You know, we had virtual investments, in a sense. Now we have people with real homes. They're taking equity out of their homes to invest in the market, and now they're foreclosing on a loan that they invested into the market. It's really, it just goes round and round.
Yeah. Professor Quinn?
Yeah, I agree with the caller that subprime loans are not an ideal way to finance a home. It's a way to perhaps create some financial stability. But there's no doubt that these have been grossly overused in recent years. In fact, in 2006, 20% of all mortgages were subprime, and that's up from 5% in 2001. And 80% of those subprime loans in 2006 were teaser loans. And I mean, if anybody really looked at that, it would be pretty obvious that something wasn't quite right. So subprime loans now comprise about 8% of the total mortgage market. There's about $10 trillion in loans out there, and it's about 8% of those are subprime. Some of these were, particularly the teaser loans, as I mentioned before, were fairly problematic. And I think that as long as housing prices were going up, it was going to be okay. But anything that can't go on forever won't, and it didn't.
Yeah, let me read from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from this past Sunday. The headline, Subprime Loans Pain Hits Home. Wisconsinites have paid dearly for the wild success of the quick but costly subprime loan trade. Jumping ahead, these loans accounted for nearly 21% of the state's mortgage market and a stunning 34% of Milwaukee County's market, according to records. Homeowners across the state took on $1.6 billion in subprime loans in 2005 alone, the most recent year for which figures are available. 34% of Milwaukee County's housing market.
Yeah, that should be raising more red flags than the Chinese infantry. Mm-hmm. But the it was going to come home to roost sooner or later. Like many other bubbles or mistakes of this type, people think that the rules changed. And, of course, they didn't change. You know, the gravity hasn't changed, and, sort of the rules of business cycles haven't changed either. This was a ticking time bomb. But here's the issue. Who do you tell no to? You know, quite a few of those, of that 34% might be stretched, but they own their own homes. And quite a few of them are going to wind up in a much better financial position than they were, 5 years ago. The policy question here is, how much do you put the clamps on this? The market will provide some discipline, but obviously markets do screw up sometimes, and you need safeguards. That's a really hard thing. How do you do that?
Yeah. And you mentioned, we talked about it in the first half hour, that you said the South and the Midwest were being hit hardest on this, and the headlines, Wisconsin's foreclosure rate above the U.S. average. We don't know why this is?
I'm not sure why that is. Mm-hmm. I know Ohio is in really bad shape, and Michigan's in really bad shape. Something like 2% of loans in the north central region of the U.S. are in foreclosure, which is, I mean, that's it. It's over. Game over. Mm-hmm. But in Ohio and Michigan, it's 3% or more. That means 3% of home mortgages. I mean, 3% of folks are losing their homes.
Yeah, let me take another call. Joe in Jefferson. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hello. I have a question about value of homes and prices of homes. They seem very high in Wisconsin. I've been trying to hire some people, and I've been looking at out-of-state candidates. And, when they do a study as to what it would take to sell their home and buy a comparable home in Wisconsin, it's always 20 to 30% higher. Doesn't matter if they came out of Indianapolis, Dallas-Fort Worth, the Carolinas. It doesn't matter for them to move to the Milwaukee area. They have a 20, 30% hit to buy the same or comparable home.
Boy, I would have thought that certain cities, but maybe not Milwaukee. But what about that, Professor Quinn?
Well, markets, housing markets are local. The old adage, location, location, location really does matter. If you have employees that are coming from Chicago, that's great, or Minneapolis, that's great, because the home prices there are higher. If you have people coming from, say, as you mentioned, Indianapolis or some other places where they haven't seen the rises, it'll be quite shocking.
Yeah. And I don't know, anything else, Joe?
Well, I was just wondering if there's a reason why Milwaukee is more expensive. We've been researching this, and we can't find anything that adds up.
Yeah, I don't. Do you know, Professor Quinn?
I think compared to other large cities, Milwaukee is maybe average or even perhaps slightly below average.
Right. I was thinking, I know I did a cost of living survey, like just to see, and it was much lower cost of living in Milwaukee, say, than Washington, D.C.
Or Atlanta, or one of the others.
Yeah. Well, Joe, don't know exactly. Thanks for calling. Ernest, well, wait a minute. Let me check our weather forecast, and then I'll go to Ernest in Hayward. We are talking about the housing market and the hike in mortgage foreclosures that we're hearing about in the news these days, and wondering what all this means and what it will do to our economy overall and what it's doing to our neighborhoods. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Talking with Kevin Quinn, an associate professor of economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8 o'clock, a funny story and a scary story. It's the Twinkie deconstructed. Wait till you find out what's in a Twinkie and where it all comes from. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about the housing market right now. That's kind of scary to some. Foreclosure rates up. Foreclosure rates in Wisconsin higher than the national average. What's going on here? An email, Professor Quinn, from Jane in Appleton that I want to share. Just wondering how many of the foreclosures we're seeing are the result of too many people buying houses that are way over their heads. I've seen too many people, especially young people, who feel that their first homes have to be just like the ones their parents have gotten after many years of marriage and saving. They can't begin with a starter home. They need the big McMansion that they grew up in and aren't willing to change their spending or lifestyle habits when they get it. What do you think?
I think that's an excellent point. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about it, in a sense, all foreclosures are sort of a result of people being in over their heads. Now, some of those are a result of people unexpectedly losing their jobs, illnesses, divorces, other kinds of tragedies that you can't foresee. But there has been no doubt about the fact that people have been very optimistic about the future. If you look at the average home size, the median home size for new homes is something like 2,200 or 2,300 square feet, mm-hmm. which 30 years ago would have been considered to be a very large home. Now it's the middle of the distribution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, young folks, you know, grew up in the 1980s and to some extent the 1990s, and, you know, instant gratification is not fast enough mm-hmm. in many cases. They have access to credit in a way that older folks just never did, and they have a different attitude toward it, many of them, not all of them, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I'm quite content in my starter home. It's a small three bedroom ranch, and I don't even see any reason to move. I don't have a growing family or anything like that. But if I wanted to sell my home right now, I'm gonna be in a little bit of trouble, right? In terms of there's not going to be enough buyers out there that nobody might want my home.
Well, you know, at the right price, a home will sell.
Yeah, right. If I want to sell it for a lot less than maybe what I put into it, or not get back my investment or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it sounds trite and it sounds like a smart aleck remark, but mm-hmm. buying low and selling high is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks, especially those at the fringes of this market, the ones that are in the most trouble, the ones that got these loans, the teaser loans 2 years ago that have now reset, are the ones that were on the fringe of the credit market and the top of the housing prices. And so they're in trouble. Those folks are in trouble as a result of that. But, you know, you talked about your starter home being a three-bedroom. If you remember, Leave It to Beaver, and, you know, that was considered to be a pretty upscale, upper-middle-class family. That was a small house, one TV, one telephone,
right.
One car.
Right.
You know, our opinions about required standard of living have really changed.
Yeah. Let's go now to Ernest in Hayward. Thanks for waiting, Ernest. You're on the air.
I'd like to suggest that government is a factor in the need for market correction in the housing industry. You know, government can't intervene anywhere, not just in Iraq, properly. For example, Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority offers no money down mortgages for the first-time home buyer. Meanwhile, on the upper scale, taxpayers are footing the bill for tax expenditures on mortgage interest deductions and other tax advantages that exceed the entire HUD budget. The moral is, the more you got, the more the government will subsidize you. But even the peons get some of the trickle-down effect.
That's a good point. You know, home ownership is considered to be part of the American dream. When you think about the American dream, that's what it is. It's owning your own home, the security of that. You know, the idea of land, owning land, et cetera, has been part of America since the colonies. So it is politically advantaged. And I think there are a lot of people that would agree with that. But suppose we're in a situation where there were no options for FHA loans with no money down, et cetera, and then only people that were the most financially secure would be able to get homes. I don't think that's a better situation than allowing allowing some increases in troubled loans in order to get more people access to that American dream.
Thank you, Ernest. David in South Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Excellent program. I think your guest has put a fine point on my question. I was wondering if to what extent is this a regulatory failure, a regulatory failure in the banking industry? Now, in my adult life, my economic life absorbed the impact of the bogus loans to the African nations that were never repaid. My Financial Life absorbed the economic ripples from the savings and loan scandal. And I'm wondering, is this round three of a regulatory failure, or is this an excess that does put people in their homes? I'm wondering, I haven't figured this out yet.
That's a great question, and although I'm not an expert in bank regulation, it's my understanding that there's sort of two parallel regulatory regimes here. There's the federal that's done by a variety of agencies, and then there's also state regulation. And I think a lot of these problems are concentrated more in those entities that are regulated by the individual states. The federal government they started looking at this sort of thing last October and a little bit more this February, but a lot of these independent brokers are not regulated by the federal government, and the states have, in some cases, not been as assiduous as maybe they needed to be in looking at some of these practices.
Yeah.
But there's hell to pay now, I assure you.
Yes.
The politicians are getting involved with this, and they're going to be in it with both fists.
I'm reading somebody who is the coordinator of the Nonprofit Center of Milwaukee Incorporated, after looking at all these foreclosure numbers, saying, we're seeing the fallout from the inappropriate loans of 2005 and 2006. It'll take a few years to see this picture clearly. But I think that's what the big increase in foreclosures is going to be all about, the adjustable rate mortgages, the high interest rates, the high fees. I don't think people realize just how high their payments would go. He's not necessarily blaming the bank industry, but maybe a little bit of both, saying they were indeed inappropriate loans.
Well, I think that there clearly was inadequate education of borrowers here. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it wasn't in the best interest or the perceived best interest of some of the lenders and the brokers to educate them as well as they needed to be. The question is, though, to what degree do we want to prohibit that? I don't have an answer for that, but I think, we can't just go in the direction of banning all of them. A lot of folks would say it'd be great if we just forgave all of these loans. I'm not so sure that's a grand idea either. I guess what I would argue for is greater disclosure in these markets. That, when you get a loan, you got to sign 300 forms that say you read this, 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 and this. Well, you got to read them.
Yeah.
and to what degree is that the responsibility of individuals? I leave that to the political scientists.
Yeah, did you read all yours? No. Ann in Madison is with us now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I'm one of the victims of one of these subprime loans. Although we were able to afford our house and we still continue to be able to afford it, our adjustable rate mortgage is coming up, and I'm wondering, is there a cap on how much they can, raise your interest rate if it's high to begin with, or how does that work? I'm not really sure, what they can get away with as far as raising it. I don't know if there's, a formula that they use, or because right now we're okay, we're paying our mortgage, we've been paying it for 3 years. But I'm getting a little nervous.
Yeah, I bet, Ann. Can you just tell us how much has it gone up in these 3 years?
It hasn't at all.
Oh, I see, but it's going to.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
See, I'm confused. It's not coming up until November, but, I know that we do have one of these subprime mortgages.
Yeah. Can you help her out at all, Professor Quinn?
Well, it used to be, after the Great Depression, where there was real carnage, even far worse than this, in the home mortgage market, that there were lots of laws passed about maximum interest rates and that sort of thing, and those were relaxed in the early 1980s, and that allowed a lot of these markets to come up with. I guess my recommendation would be for the caller to read through very carefully the loan documents. Often there's a cap that's actually listed there. If there's not, then I'm guessing, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm guessing that that maybe there is no limit. You might want, depending on how your financial situation has changed, you might want to look out for another refinancing, perhaps a prime mortgage.
Thank you.
If you can do that.
And Dennis and Sister Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy and Professor. For those of us out here who are first-time home buyers with good credit scores and some savings to put down in a home, is there a way to purchase homes in foreclosure, the assumption being that one could get sort of a better deal on those properties?
That's a great question. If you are with good credit, you have money to put down, and you're not trying to sell a house right now, you're in Fat City. you're a very popular person among real estate agents. As far as the foreclosure markets are concerned, there are markets for that. I'm not as knowledgeable about that as most other people, I think. I think if you were to ask around among real estate agents, or you know, look in the paper, or perhaps look on the internet if you have access to that, you could go after that. But sure, you know, prices, when supply goes up, prices are going to go down, all else equal. If you're on the demand side, you're in great shape.
Well, we're out of time for this hour. Professor Quinn, thanks very much
Thank you.
For talking with us. Kevin Quinn, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking with us about the housing market in Wisconsin and across the nation and the big hike in foreclosure rates that we are hearing about in the news. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows at Wisconsin Public Radio, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, 1-800-747-7444. You can also listen to our talk shows. They are archived on our website, wpr.org. Let me remind you that there will be a We the People Wisconsin State Supreme Court candidate debate this coming Friday night at 7 o'clock. You can hear it here on the Ideas Network and watch it on Wisconsin Public Television. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.